Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast. We are in the home stretch, people. The Massachusetts shows this weekend, April 8th, Chicopee, Huke Lao. April 9th, the Wilbur Theater, Boston, Massachusetts. I'll be bringing my best friend Mike Furman. There will probably be music. Translation, definitely be music. So please come to one or both of those shows. And then also Irvine Improv, April 15th through the 17th with Kumail Nanjiani. And then May 2nd, we're doing our live Nerdist podcast with Kevin Pereira at The Meltdown. And then May 6th, I'll be at the Varsity Theater in Minneapolis. Hashtag MPLS. Hashtagging vocally outside of Twitter. And then going on sale Friday, April 8th, I believe, I will be returning to Portland, Oregon, May 14th at the Aladdin Theater. Information and links for all these are at, of course, Nerdist.com. I want to thank everyone who came out for the James Gunn podcast last night. It was absolutely incredible. He was great. The movie Super is phenomenal. It's super violent, though, so it's not for little kids. But it was really great. Thanks to everyone who came to the movie with us for the tweet up and then came to Meltdown afterwards for the show. So here it is. Nerdist Podcast number 75 with Mr. James Gunn. Go see Super. It's in selected cities. You will have to determine if you live in such a selected city. Why am I whispering?
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hey, thanks for coming, everybody!
Yeah!
Welcome to our Super podcast special. We literally just came from seeing Super. How many people went to see it at the Sunset 5?
Who saw it with us?
Yeah.
This has been such a fun day. I was at WonderCon today, and I
feel so far away.
There are these giant metallic birds you can crawl inside, and they take you places. And so I did the Doctor Who panel, and then I rushed here and literally brought my luggage to the movie.
Yeah,
he did. It was adorable.
Where I felt
he felt like he had to explain it.
I explained it to the ticket person who didn't even see me, but I didn't give a shit. I was like, I know I have this dumb suitcase, but I was just coming from a thing.
And then he said, right. Yeah, I was going to say it's a really dumb suitcase.
Yeah,
probably the dumbest suitcase.
Actually, the dumbest suitcase was the girl who was in the elevator with us. Who when we were going back down, we get into the elevator at the Sunset 5. And there's a group of like four hammered 20-something girls. And the one girl goes, oh my God, you look like Joel McCain. Joel McCain. And she goes, does anybody ever tell you that? And I have no tolerance for drunk people. So I was like, no, because that's not a real person.
Yeah. And then what did you call her after she got out of the elevator?
I didn't realize there was a woman standing behind
right
her.
Behind you.
Not in our group.
Right behind you. And what did you say?
All right. You said, oh, they go, when her friends got out, they're like, sorry, she's a little drunk. And then the doors closed. And I was like, oh, P.S. She's also a cunt. And then then I didn't realize. And I turn around and there's a woman who's just like back there, just kind of sneering. Like,
you, what about Jonah's line right before the doors closed? He said, of course you're drunk. It's 7 p.m.
Yes. Yeah. On a Sunday. On a Sunday. Who goes to that Sunset 5 Plaza to get hammered?
Well, assholes. Assholes go.
Rock and roll sushi.
Joel McCain. I think another thing I shouted at her, she was walking, I was like, make sure and vote for my dad, Senator John McCain.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think, I'm sure what happened was somewhere in her brain, there was this mixed up, you know, those little mosaic games where you'd have to like flip them around and then make the picture fit. It was just like a little 3x3 mm-hmm. kind of a thing. I think in her head, she had some, like a soup show of some type. Joel McHale, and then saw my strategically disheveled hair. And
then she's also crazy Republican.
That was the other thing.
Crazy into it.
And in her mind, Joel McHale is actually Senator John McCain's son, and that's why he's Joel McCain.
Yeah.
And then she just mashed all these things up together. And then also, she had that mutant cunt gene. And then
Chris, behind you!
Oh my God, that woman again! You're so cranky in the corner.
No.
Yeah,
there was a lot of in the movie theater during the trailers. They had a commercial for the new
during
season.
During the hour of trailers.
Oh, there was a Doctor Who commercial.
That was awesome.
That was cool. And then like a lot of nerds were there. Like we clapped. And then there was a lady behind us who was just like, I don't know what that's all about. Just accept that there's some things you don't know, and that you don't have to know about everything. No, there's clearly something that I don't know about.
What it is all of space and time in a tiny box.
Exactly.
And then someone's phone went off during
same
the movie.
Same lady. The phone was the same lady who was like, I don't know what that's all about. She has a phone going off in the middle of the movie.
Didn't bother to disable the ring. She's like, I'm just going to let it go.
Didn't bother to disable just like anything. Just it was loud. And it was the ringtone from a phone that you could tell is like old because they don't give a shit about phones. And it's just like... You know, dee doo doo lee doo doo lee doo doo lee.
But it wasn't the one that whenever I hear that I always sing, I don't know how to program my phone. I still don't know how to program my phone.
I like this phone. I like this phone. We could do.
I set my roommate's ringtone. He had that doo 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 doo, and I found it really fucking annoying. And I went, "This is Heath's phone," and I just. And that was his ringtone for months.
And he didn't change it?
Couldn't. Didn't know how.
He didn't know how? I used to do that to people when I worked on a little non-award-winning show called Shipmates. I got bored once and went around to a bunch of the people who worked on the show and changed the homepage on their computer to scatlovers.com.
Yeah.
And then just kind of waited. And then as people came into work,
like
that
Ella Fitzgerald.
Jesus Christ! Yeah. How do I change this back?
This is a website dedicated to people who love Scatman Crothers. Right?
Yeah, that's right. They loved his work. And,
yeah, Scat Lovers, Scatman Do.
Yeah. They loved his work in The Shining and in the Twilight Zone movie. And
He was in other things besides The Shining?
Yeah.
You fooled me. I had no idea.
He was also in Zapped, as a matter of fact.
Oh, he's in Zapped?
Yes, of course. Why is that? Why would you Thank laugh you, at this Scatman Crothers? Tragic career going from a Kubrick movie to Zapped.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
A Scott Baio movie, so it's a fucking up.
It is
upwards.
It is an arc. Yeah. Oh, you know, Scatman Crothers would actually he might be better than Kevin Bacon in terms of like linking people just from the weird movies that he's
done.
That's
true. Yeah.
We all earned a new Kevin Bacon movie tonight.
Yes.
Oh shit.
And that is a perfect segue to introduce our guest for tonight and the guy who has helped us earn another Kevin Bacon movie. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. James Gunn. James
Hello,
Gunn!
Humans, crowd, the people staring.
I greatly enjoyed your movie. Thank you for making it.
Thank you. Yeah. It's an enjoyable film. that's one of the main things we attempted to make with this movie, was a movie that was quite enjoyable.
Yes. There are so many things that I want to talk about that I shouldn't talk about because I don't want to give anything away to people listening to the podcast.
We've already let the world know the major spoiler that Ellen Page rapes Rainn Wilson.
So yes.
We can give that one up.
Yes.
That was great.
There is a little bit of page rape.
Like that?
Yeah, the scene was like so uncomfortable where I was like, you know, because a lot of indie guys, they're always like, oh, that'd be so awesome if you like Ellen Page raped you, but then you realize it's not awesome. it's awkward and
part
shitty.
Of me hoped it turned into a Law and Order Special Victims Unit where the guy got raped and then he's like, no, I didn't. Nothing happened, all right?
Yeah.
And then Stabler's like, you know what happened? She raped you, man.
Now, do you think after this, did Rain change his name to Rape with two P's?
Yeah. I think the weird thing about me in the rape scene is it's not the rape that bothers me. It's the fact that she wants to put on the superhero mask while she's fucking him. And that kind of hurts my feelings. I think that would hurt my feelings. Like, the rape is kind of a compliment to a guy.
I really think
to a guy, it's a nice thing. It's like, you know, you want to fuck me so bad, you're going to force me into doing
it. Yeah. Yes.
And that makes me sort of happy. But you only want to do it if I have a mask on. Yeah. And that makes me sad.
Tiny Ellen Page.
Thumbing it in.
What did you say to turn the crowd?
Thumbing it in.
It in.
Oh, sorry, rape. Everyone's like, ha, 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 rape. And then when you use like a technical term, like trying to put a flaccid dick inside of a vagina, everyone's like, wait, far, too far. Get back to that rape stuff. That stuff is cool.
Rape is one thing, but thumbing it is entirely another issue, my friend.
Offensive, offensive.
I never actually...
I didn't know there was a name for that.
I love that.
I didn't know that was a thing. Yeah.
Clearly, you've only had sex with people you like, Matt.
Is that a thing now? We're going to start referring to people like, she's a thumber. If I had to,
I can figure out a way. That's pretty much what it is.
I do like to call it a flassy. That's my term. A flassy? Like, yeah, it's like, you know, if I, you know, I want to, you know, sometimes get it half
flassy.
You
sound like 30s hitman. Thumber and flassy. Hey, flassy, come on over. Yeah. Get thumber.
I thumb my flassy.
Fantastic. well, so you guys showed the movie at South by Southwest.
We did.
Which I was unable to attend, but I heard nothing but great things about it.
Yeah, but we opened it up actually at the Toronto Film Festival this year. That was where we sold the movie. Mm-hmm. So we showed it at the Midnight Madness Festival there. We sold it, and then we went to South by Southwest, and now I saw you yesterday morning going to WonderCon.
Yes. We were on the same Southwest flight.
Same.
Completely unaware that earlier that morning, another Southwest flight had peeled open like a tuna can.
Yeah, I had
no idea.
Yeah.
We're lucky we even made it out of the airport because they grounded so many Southwest flights.
I know. I can't believe I made it back here, actually, because I came back here today as well. So it's...
I don't know if you caught this because it happened right in front of you. The flight attendant and I had like a weird exchange. And it happened right in front of you, and I was like, I hope James doesn't think I'm a cock. I had my bag...
Joel McCain, how are you flying
Joel
today?
McCain! I had my bag and my suitcase, and I was trying to get into the seat, but the flight attendant was coming from the rear of the plane, and he wouldn't get out of the way. He was just insistent that he had to get by me at that time.
Like he had a job to do or something?
He did not do a job. He just fucking stood in the exit row, and just, you know how they just stand in the exit row and watch people come in? That's what he did.
Judging everyone.
Yeah.
You have to judge to see if they're able to sit in the exit row.
Oh, they look at me and go, you should have bought two seats, fatty.
I kind of... Not so much, though, because you've lost a ton of weight on your slow carb diet. seat and a half. Max.
Wait a second. We sat next to each other in the theater. It was fine.
Right. But so I kind of bumped him with my bag, and he was like, ugh, just go ahead and hit me with your bag. And I'm like, but I am lumbering through a tiny aisle. It's your responsibility to take a step back. Also, I'm the customer. And I found myself like so apologetic to this guy. Like, and even like, I was like, oh, I'm sorry. And he kind of pulled away. Like, I touched him. And I'm like,
why would I think you were a dick then?
I don't know. No, I didn't hit him, but I
think if you touch a flight attendant, an air marshal will shoot you.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I died.
Listen, flight attendant, you have a responsibility to step back. You should have given him just a big speech.
I really should have, but I didn't, but we made it. How was your WonderCon experience?
I don't remember it. We went to, we did a big panel, Rainn Wilson and I. There's a couple thousand people in there, so that was a great time. And then I did a screening last night, did a lot of press.
Yeah.
It's miserable. I'm actually quite miserable right now. I'm at the very end of like this sort of press tour, and I've been in, you know, like five cities over the past week.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Going from place to place. And this is actually sort of the finish line tonight here.
This is
At Meltdown Comics.
Nice.
And so I'm very excited.
Yeah.
And I don't have a flassy. In fact, I have a full erection.
I can see it from
right
here.
Finish line.
That's good, because it is, you know, like jumping around. How many festivals have you been to? Toronto, you've been to South By, you've been to
Toronto, South By. We went to Emerald City Comic Con. I was at Sitges in Spain. I was at Torino Film Festival in Italy.
Oh, you literally just popped over to Europe for like a day.
Well, that was a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
But I've been going from place. You know, we were in New York. We did a premiere there with mm-hmm. Kevin Bacon, who couldn't make the premiere here in Los Angeles last mm-hmm. week. So we did one with Kevin Bacon and Liv Tyler there in Boston. I was there.
Wow.
Places.
Did Steve Agee get to go to any of these exotic places?
Steve Agee, we try to keep him away from as many places as possible. Steve Agee, who says the word
hey guys, Steve Agee,
Steve
actual comic book guy.
You never know who's going to drop by.
Unless, so embarrassed.
Unless they text you and ask if they can come take pictures.
It's crazy though that you got Steve actually calling a kid an asshole on camera, because he does that in real life all the time.
Yeah. That kid is my nephew, actually.
And is he?
Yeah, he's my nephew.
No, is he an asshole?
He's an asshole. He's 8 years old. Of course he's an asshole.
Typical asshole.
But my sister was actually an extra on that day, and I said, you know, I need a kid to have Steve age. He's gonna call Rainn Wilson a cunt right in front of the kid. You know, Beth, do you think that's okay? And she's like, yeah, that's gonna be fine. So Steve, she says, hopefully he'll forget it. So in the movie, Steve Agee calls Rainn Wilson a cunt and then hands my nephew, Griffin, a comic book stack and calls him an asshole. And my sister's driving home that night, and she says to Griffin, you know, how was your day? And she said, what was that thing that man was saying? what a, and he couldn't remember what it was. And my sister's like, shoot, I dodged a bullet. That's great. And a week later, he's driving. This is totally true. A week later, they're driving down the street, and he's like, Mommy, I remember what he said. He said, what a cunt.
Hooray, Steve Agee.
It's a new fun word.
It is a fun word.
So
it really is.
Why, I use it in an elevator just today. That's how fun it is. So harsh with the American accent, though. If I just had the British lilt, it would make it so much more charming and acceptable than it actually is. Yeah. It just sounds too German with the American accent. Cunt!
That was Captain Kirky.
Yeah, I am. Is cunt an evil supervillain that you're trying to stop? Cunt!
Yes. The Crimson Cunt.
The Crimson Cunt.
That's what her name should have been.
Oh.
That's her superhero name.
She should have brought it up as an idea.
Yeah, that would have been great.
Yeah, I would have liked that.
So how did this movie... Oh, first of all, great job on Slither. What a fucking great movie
Slither.
That was. Oh, my God.
And you brought back Michael Rooker from Slither, which is great.
Yes, yes. I have a bunch of people. Rooker is in Slither. He's also in Super. Nathan Fillion's in both Slither and Super. Greg Henry's in both Slither and Super. So.
And Rob Zombie also.
Rob Zombie is in both Slither and Super. That's true.
I saw Rob the other night, and I said, oh, I'm doing this thing this Sunday night with James Gunn. He's like, oh, ask him about how, see if you can figure out which voice I am. Because he pops up. Like, he does something in each one of the movies. How did you guys hook up?
Rob Zombie uses my composer, Tyler Bates, on all of his films. And we sort of just met through Tyler. And we hit it off, you know. And so I asked him to do a role in Slither, and he was very accommodating. He came in and did, it was just a voice. He plays a doctor on the phone talking to Elizabeth Banks. And he's very excited. He's very humble about it. And he gave me a book of the Devil's Rejects artwork, and he wrote in it, you know, thanks for giving me the role in the movie. I really don't mind if you cut me out. And that's sort of like Rob's attitude about everything.
Yeah.
He's great. He's great.
Yeah, I actually didn't peg him in this movie. Someone had to tell me
who
he was. I'm like, oh, yes, now I hear it.
He's God. He's the voice of God.
He's the he was the voice of God. Yeah. So how did this movie, how did Super come together? When did you write it? How did it work?
Well, I wrote the screenplay back in 2002. I was originally writing it as a short film, and it just sort of kept pouring out of me. I wrote 57 pages in one day, and that was my first draft. And then I said, okay, I'll turn this into a feature. In 2004, I had a producer, Chuck Roven, who produced the Dark Knight films. He was going to produce the movie then, but we couldn't agree on a lead actor with the people that were financing it. The only person I really thought could do it at the time was John C. Reilly, and he wasn't considered a big enough actor in 2004 to do the movie, so we couldn't even offer it to him. So I let go of it. I did Slither instead. Actually, I wrote Slither as something to sell while I did Super. And the guy who was producing that wanted me to direct it. So I'm like, okay, that's a bird in the hand. I did that. Almost did Super again in 2008, and didn't happen for a bunch of reasons. And then 2 years ago, my ex-wife, Jenna Fisher, who I'm still very close with, called me up, and she said, you know, why aren't you doing that script Super? That's my favorite script of yours. I really love that movie. I really think you should do it. And I said, well, it's an esoteric film. It's very dark. It's hard getting all the financing and doing it the way I want to do it. And we can't find somebody for the lead actor. And she said, have you ever thought of Rain? And I'd known Rain for 5 years. And I was like, wow, that works. Rain was really perfect for it. And I like the idea of taking somebody who people see in a certain way and sort of turning them around as a performer and having people see them in a new way. And I thought that was something we could do with Super. Same thing with Ellen Page. So that was really where it started. Once Rain was on board, then we just didn't stop and kept going until we got it done.
And I'm sure that Rain loved that too, of just being able to, you know, to play a non-Dwight Schrute type
mean,
character.
Yeah, Rain loved having a role that, you know, has dramatic elements to it, has comedic elements to it, in which you can also like shoot a bunch of people in the face. He loves that.
I wouldn't put that past the character of Dwight Schrute, though.
Yeah.
Rain is such a phenomenal actor, and I mean, he was so great. He was so great in this movie.
He's amazing in the movie. I mean, there's a scene at the beginning where he's praying to God, and it's a very funny scene, but it's also extremely sad. And that when he nailed that scene at the beginning, that was on the second day of shooting, I knew that, you know, we really had something very special with his performance, and he is absolutely stunning in the film. So
yeah, it was really great. Although I will say, I want people to listen, it is not a kid's movie. Like, don't take little kids to see the movie. Thinking, did you guys all see it? All you guys see it? Yeah.
Did you see that? I'm gonna say he was 9 or 10 year old. Go get coke and then come back to the movie.
You say get coffee? That 9 year old's like, I need some coffee.
Well, you know. But yeah, like I was like, oh, he's enjoying this, I'm sure.
Wow. Yeah. Like, no, it's a very dark film.
It's really.
It's unrated. I mean, it's an unrated movie.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, it's totally unrated. Yeah.
I guess I understand that. I mean, what was so fun about watching it is just so much shit happened in the movie that I did not see coming at all. Or like, holy shit, that never happens. Like, it's just the kind of shit that you never see happen in a movie where something gets, fuck, I don't want to give anything away, but just where you go, oh, well, this part will work out in this way, and none of that happened.
Yeah, I think we really wanted to make a movie where you didn't know you really truly don't know what's going to happen next. I mean, no matter what you say about Super, nobody walks into the movie and knows where the movie is going to end.
Right.
We try to take you through twists and turns, so you really don't know what's going to happen next.
Yeah, well, there was a scene that it was online, so I'm not really giving anything away. The line cutter, the line butter.
Yeah, sure.
But like the amount of time you spend on the guy's face after his skull starts to split is like some of the perfect parts of the movie where you just stay on the gore for just a little too long, and that's what makes it really fucking awesome and uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have all these superhero movies where, you know, things are blowing up and people are getting knocked unconscious and getting back up, and we don't ever see the actual repercussions of violence.
I don't want to die.
That guy actually has, he was there the other night. He has no arms in real life. That was
I feel even better for laughing at him.
Seth Rogen had a special screening of the movie last week, and we sat next, my girlfriend Mia Matsumiya was sitting in the front row there, and I sat next to Seth during the movie, and he's got that very distinctive, like, and during all of, like, the sickest parts, including the guy without the arms who Rain shoots twice after he begs for his life, that really is kind of, but whatever, he's just giggling hysterically.
Yeah, it's great.
The only person in the theater too that's like giggling hysterically.
That's the kind of stuff I like, though. Like me and my girlfriend Deanna, like we grew up on horror movies. So every time there's like insane fucked up gore, we just go, "Yes!" We turn in into Brendan Fraser going, "Ah, yeah!" It's so full of joy. We're just so into it.
But I wouldn't even say that it's gore though, because when I think of gore, I think of stuff that doesn't seem real because it's so crazy but the shit that is in the movie is so creepily realistic. I mean, like, there's one scene where I hope this isn't giving too much away. Where he basically Rain's having a vision, and then the top of his head gets where the top of his skull comes off. And Matt used to work in a funeral home, and he goes, "Yeah, that's pretty much what that looks like."
Guys got that right.
Yeah, that's Todd Masters is a guy who does. He did all my makeup effects for Slither and for Super, and he does a great job. And we do a lot of things where we mix visual effects and practical effects.
Yeah,
and that seems to be a way in which we can get effects that look real that people don't know what it is.
Which is rare. Rare that anyone does that anymore. Bothering doing practical effects.
No, people try to do it all that way, or people do it all the other way. It doesn't like it. You know,
that looks so much better than Ray Liotta in Hannibal.
Well, it's like you think about like the reboot of Nightmare on Elm Street, and then there's a scene where he kind of is coming out of the wall, and they did that practically in the original, and then they did it digitally in the remake, and that seems stupid because they had already done it 20 years before that practically, so it seems like it would be even easier to do it now.
Yeah,
it's just a pointless thing to do digitally, and that's why I think there's points to being digital and there's points to being practical, but there's like great ways to just combine it. There's no reason not to, I think.
Yeah, I think that the combination is really, you know, there's a lot of people online who are always arguing about practical versus, you know, visual effects, but it really is using the best of both worlds to make something that looks as real as possible, as opposed to having some sort of religious belief in one or the other.
Well, it's, and also just the idea that, You know, there are some parts where people are just getting hit with a fucking pipe wrench, and it just, the sound of it is, it hit me on such a deep molecular level where I'm like, that is what that would sound like. And it's so disturbing.
When you involuntarily go, oh.
It was like the opposite of your reaction when people hang up phones and Foley artists make them do things they don't do.
Oh, yeah. I went on a rant because on Dexter, he answers his capacitive phone with a leather glove.
Like, oh, yeah.
Or like when they hit a phone.
That made me furious.
Yes.
Someone online. I saw someone tweeted you saying, like, it's like, actually, no, I've done it with a leather glove before.
They said latex glove. They did it with a latex glove. Oh, wow. And then I went right back and go, it wasn't a latex glove. It was when he has leather gloves on. Latex gloves just when he was in the kill room.
He's getting into his life after People Zone. Stop.
I don't like what has nothing to do with sound, but in movies, people never say hello, goodbye when they answer the phone.
They just click the phone.
They always, they pick it up, and it's like, it's just so obviously they're trying to save time.
Or someone hangs up on, did we talk about this, where someone hangs up on a cell phone and you hear a dial tone? You're like, you don't hear dial tones on the cell phone.
No, I always say that when people answer the phone in movies, I go, yeah. I was like, that's shitty. No one would ever do that. And then I was working with a guy once. He answered his phone. He was like, yeah. I was like, oh, fuck, you're a dick.
No, the person on the other phone was like, oh, I'm just calling to make sure you're still an asshole. All right, click.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how was, when you were assembling the cast, so was Rain, was he cast last? Did you have Ellen?
Oh, no. It was totally Rain first. Rain knew Ellen Page from Juno, so he gave her the script to look at, which I actually thought was a waste of time because I really thought it was going to be Rain and then, a few up-and-comers for the other roles. But he said, no, I'll give it to Ellen. Let's give her a chance. And she read it, and like a week later, she's like, I'm really interested in doing this script. We sat down. We had lunch. We got along. She's a really smart young girl, and she said she wanted to do it. And we still couldn't get financing, by the way, because the movie's so dark and creepy.
How did you get it?
Liv Tyler, actually. Because then Liv Tyler came on board.
Aerosmith money.
This movie looks sexy in a skirt.
Thanks, Steven Tyler.
I have all this money.
Here's $50 million.
I have all this money left over from the Crazy video.
It's not weird at all. I made my daughter be a stripper in one of my videos. Come ride my roller coaster in Disney World.
Play some Revolution X.
But Liv Tyler, she's considered like she's an international star because she's been in Lord of the Rings and Incredible Hulk and The Strangers and Armageddon and all these movies that have
never heard of any of those.
Huge, yeah. They're all like pretty popular movies. And so because of that, we finally got our financing with those three actors. Then we got Kevin Bacon.
Nice.
Kevin Bacon, actually, I had another actor hired to play that role. I never even talked to Kevin Bacon about it. And that actor ended up being very untrustworthy in a way. He was disappearing and going to Russia, and I couldn't get a hold of him.
Was it Charlie Sheen?
It was John Cryer.
Oh, what?
No.
That would be amazing.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, my God. John Cryer as a drug kingpin would be fucking awesome.
That would be great. It'd be like...
Yeah. What if it was the half-man? You know, the kid. I don't know what his name is. I know there's two and there's a
half-man.
Whatever.
That mutant boy they have on that show.
You know. The one that aged weird.
It was that kid who played Corky on Life Goes On. Yeah. He was the
Chris
original,
Burke.
He was the original
Chris
villain.
Burke. Chris Burke. Good poem.
He has an album. He has a country album.
Really?
You can find Chris Burke.
And incredible videos.
Do they have videos for it?
There are videos online of Chris Burke.
Yeah, there's a picture of him on the cover with a cowboy hat. Look it up. It's
Chris
on.
Burke,
you can get it. You can get him on eBay.
You can get him on
I
eBay?
Just bummed everybody out, didn't it? Oh, he really kept trying, didn't he?
Hey, you know what, Jonah? Life goes on. It was right there.
It's good.
Damn.
But yeah, so I fired that guy because he was just giving me heart palpitations. And then I gave the script to Kevin, asked him to do it, and he said yes, and I was shocked.
Oh, that's great.
So that's the cast, and then Nathan Fillion, of course.
Oh, Fillion.
Those guys are my friends, so they did it because
Fillion's so great.
Yeah, asshole. No, he is great. He's an amazing guy. He's totally easy to work with, and every time I do anything with him, he always goes above and beyond.
He made coffee for us when he was on our podcast.
He
so.
Gave me
what?
A, he gave
what
me
are
a
you
case
do?
For my iPhone.
He gave me this case that is still on my phone because he did not like the idea that my phone wasn't protected.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
So he was like, no, here, take this case. Take this case.
Yeah,
like,
he gave me right.
Then he goes into a closet and he's like, you guys got iPads? Yeah. And then he goes, here, take this, a stylus.
Don't. A capacitor. And I for a minute, I was like, he's going to give us iPads.
He just got a closet of iPads.
And then like he's had one, like a stylus pen out for me. I was like, oh, I don't have one. Thanks, asshole.
Yeah, that's he's a real friendly guy. That's how I met him in the men's bathroom at the Beverly Center.
Oh, nice.
He was tapping on the floor next to me.
And that's how you know.
He reached around. He, you know, jerked me off a little. And I'm like, this is the nicest guy in the
world.
Yeah,
well, and he refers to his cock as a capacitive stylus.
That's what it was.
You can use it on your iPad. Yeah.
Technically, it is.
Yeah, he fucked the Nerdist podcast. Yeah, no, Nathan, you know, actually makes me feel bad. We go out to dinner with him all the time, and he's one of these guys who stands up every time a woman
of
leaves
course.
The table. Or
oh, he's
back.
Just showing off.
He really is.
Look
that
how tall
guy.
I
yeah,
am.
But he does it sincerely, but it's sort of a dick move. Yeah. Because, you know, I went to the bathroom right before he did, and or somebody else did, and came back, and I'm just.
Is he nice or just Canadian?
He is truly a nice guy, but he is Canadian, too.
Yeah. You never know.
You know, what was so great, there were a couple of things that I really thought stood out. Number one, the juxtaposition of adorable things with absolutely horrific things.
Yeah, that's
it was just like one second, because the opening credits were done by this company that I know called Puny.
Yes,
they're
yes.
based in Minneapolis. Yes. They also work on Yo Gabba Gabba, yep. and they're fucking great. And the opening credit sequence was phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a big animated dance scene. It's sort of it, like if anybody's ever seen Grease, I always, when I was a kid.
Anyone
I
ever see that?
I always wanted to have, I wanted to have animated credits like in Grease, you know, because I loved that when I was a kid. So I'm like, yeah, this is a perfect movie for it. A movie in which, you know, there's a female on male superhero rape.
It's like Batman Returns all over again.
No.
Except in that case, the audience felt like they were being
right,
raped.
Right,
in that movie.
Of course. I don't get it. Who's Christopher Walken? Who is he supposed to be? I don't get it.
I don't know. What's that?
What is he?
Max Schreck.
He's Max Schreck.
He's Max Schreck. Who was played by Billy Dee Williams in Batman Returns.
Yes.
No, Billy Dee Williams was Harvey Dent.
No, he was Harvey Dent. Yeah.
I said that way too confidently. With way too much confidence that I proclaimed that I just want Billy Dee Williams to play every role.
Don't we all?
So, what was the when everyone first read, like, was all of the graphic stuff on the page?
Yeah, completely. I mean, actually, in, you know, I very, you know, specifically, you know, would describe exactly what the gore effects were and describe that they looked very real, which was different than Slither, because in Slither the gore is kind of like what you were talking about earlier. It's kind of over the top and explosive, and it's always very funny, and it's not, it's more gory and less impactful. Mm-hmm. And in this movie, it really was about really feeling like it's real. So that was all written out on the page, the gore, all of it. It's gushy, which is Ellen Page.
Oh my God, I will never get that line out of my head.
Ellen Page's new catchphrase.
Why was I the only one that laughed in that theater? And you know I was. Why was I the only one that laughed? That was funny.
Was there something in your head that you were like, you know what, I kind of want to make the jump from kind of fun gore to like real, like really like fuck people up in a movie theater?
You mean like in my career? Or?
No. I mean like just artistically, you know.
Artistically, yeah. I mean, I just felt drawn to the movie artistically in terms of making a. It really is a personal movie in one respect, because I do relate to the main character of Frank a lot, you know. And so it was something that I felt very drawn to make. And I didn't want to make it. A huge part of me, honestly, did not want to make this movie, because we made it for a couple $1 million. I don't make any money off of it. Even in success, I can't make that much money. And it was, I just kept coming back to it again and again and again. I couldn't leave it alone. It kept going through my head. And then when I tried to let it go, somebody like, you know, Jenna Fisher would come up and, you know, try to push me into making it. So, I honestly didn't want to make the movie. I thought it was so dark and strange and non-commercial. But I'm really happy that I did. It was sort of like returning my roots a little bit and being just completely creative and not being about what the Hollywood machinery is.
So I felt good about it.
So you really got to do whatever you wanted to do.
I got to do 100% whatever I wanted throughout the whole movie. That was the deal from the beginning, was that I was going to do the movie the way I wanted to do it, or else I wasn't going to do it. Because when you make a movie for that low of a budget, you have this cast behind you that wants your vision on screen, mm-hmm. then you can kind of do whatever you want. But even down to like the songs, like that was a big fight, what the songs were in the movie. I had to really just beg Cheap Trick to give us, you know, if you want my love.
Cheap Trick, please.
For $1,500 bucks, they gave us that song.
Oh, my God.
Something like that, something around that.
Oh, I'm going to buy it.
But it was because Liv Tyler went and took them the video of her having sex with Rain, over which the song plays, and brought it backstage to at the show in Irvine where Cheap Trick was playing with Aerosmith, to show it to them, to ask them to play.
Aerosmith.
It all comes back.
Here's a video of my daughter fucking a guy. Here's a video of my daughter fucking Dwight. All right. Well, all right.
That's like, the thing is, this is you're doing the most generic rock and roll voice. But
I bet she's got her mother's vagina.
All right, that's enough. Steven Tyler, please. Steven Tyler, come on.
It does also sound a little bit like a sort of an Aunt Jemima voice. In a way. I gotta say, it's like there's a little bit of a
loving an elevator with a delicious short stack of pancakes.
It sounds like Nipsey Russell.
It is a little bit, Nipsey Russell.
I
feel bad because it's not sounding that way in my head, so I apologize for any.
You apologize to Nipsey?
I'm sorry, all Nipsey time. Russell. And Steven Tyler.
That's all right, Chris. Now I'm doing it shit.
You said you had like a lot of control, and it felt like kind of going back to your roots. Did it feel like back in the Troma days, like that you were just kind of doing whatever you wanted?
In some ways it was like the Troma days because we just had nothing to lose, But in another way, Troma was very disorganized, and I wasn't.
Really?
You're kidding.
Wait.
What? No, I've been on their website.
Troma Films.
They're super organized. Yeah.
Wait, are the website where it's like drippy
yeah.
HTML?
Yeah. And a flying toaster passes the screen.
It's an angel fire. You can go to an angel fire.
Yeah, so I mean, it was much, and I didn't have control at Troma. I was, second in command after Lloyd when I was making movies there. So it was really about, even, before that in some ways, just being able, when I was making, like student films, and being able to do that and do whatever I wanted and take risks and do something experimental and,
And make things really depressing.
And make things really depressing, yeah.
But in a really great way. Is it weird now that... Now you've gotten this piece of work out of your head. Is there just an empty space there? Or did something else crawl in to over your obsession?
No, did something slither into
your brain? Oh, Jonah. Oh, Jonah. Kapow. Hashtag rad.
No, actually, it was really, quite honestly, I did slither and I enjoyed, a lot of the process of doing slither. But when I got to the end of it, I suddenly was transitioning from being a screenwriter to being a director. And when you're a director, you really lose your life. You have no life for about a year. And I was really questioned whether I wanted to ever make another movie again. Because I was happy with the product, but it was rough. And I like life. I like hanging out with my friends. I like doing other stuff. I like reading comic books and doing all these things. And so I did.
Weirdo.
Yeah. I know. And but it was really super, kind of brought me back into a creative way of thinking and thinking in a different way. And so I've already finished another screenplay. I've got another movie coming out that I did with the Farrelly Brothers, mm-hmm. which is like a bunch of comedy directors doing different shorts.
Yeah.
And got a video game coming out. So it's like I've kind of have found this like stream of creativity that was really good for me. And I think a lot of it came from doing Super, from kind of opening myself up and sort of cleansing my brain palate in a way.
Well, what was your ideal career when you were when you were starting out? Like, what did you want to see happen?
I think I always, what I cared about is really what I cared about with Super. It was, I always wanted to be, I wanted to make a living off of what I was doing. But what I really care about is not having a whole, I, 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 I want to speak to some people, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, I think so many movies today are about speaking to all four quadrants, and you have to please everybody with everything. And for me, it's really important to go back to the artwork that I loved as a kid, the stuff that spoke to me, stuff like David Cronenberg or Alice Cooper or The Clash, or things that were not meant for everybody. Mm-hmm. They were things that spoke to me. And being a weird little kid from Manchester, Missouri, where I was a complete oddball and outcast, it made me feel less alone. So having things where I really maybe speak powerfully to some people as opposed to, you know, speaking broadly to everybody.
And what's great is that I feel like, you know, now we're at a now our culture is so niche oriented that you can do that and survive.
Yeah, but in the movie business, it's gotten harder because independent film has sort of dried up. It's very difficult to put movies into theaters at all. I mean, Super is going like on demand, you know, April 13th, and that's the way we're financially able to do all of this is through going onto TV.
Do you not like that? Do you not like there's just the fact that it's not going to be on a smaller screen for the first time for a lot of people?
I am very grateful that we have a very large potential audience for the film, and that's more important to me than being, you know, a movie in a theater. But, you know, like any filmmaker, I kind of miss the days where it's like there were independent films that could play forever in theaters. And, you know, a movie like E.T. could come out and it makes a couple million dollars the first weekend and a little bit more the next. And I mean, that's one of the problems, too. It's like all movies now, you know, they make a third to a half of the money they make on opening weekend. And it's like this herd mentality, which means the movie doesn't have to be any good. The trailer needs to be good and the idea needs to be good, but the movie doesn't need to be any good. Mm-hmm. And that's depressing to me. And I feel like an old man saying that movies today aren't as good as they used to be, but there's an actual specific reason that movies are not as good as they used to be. Even, you know, in the 80s, 90s, even the early 2000s, it's different.
Do you think you'll be able to, you know, if someone came along and they're like, oh, we want you to direct this huge commercial comic book movie and it wasn't kind of what you wanted to do, would you be able to go back to, you know, working under someone and having to do what a studio would say, or are you going to keep pursuing this path?
The next thing I'm doing is probably sort of an in-between thing. It's more of a studio project, but it's not so expensive if I do what I want to do next. I've had, you know, whatever the big comic book guys come to me and want me to make different movies of different superheroes. And it's just never spoken to me.
If someone comes to you with a Governator, turn it down.
Oh my God, right? I thought that was a joke when I read about
it. Yep, I was like, oh, it's very close to April 1st. This probably came out then. People are picking it up now. And nope, that's real.
It's true?
Yeah. Stan Lee and
Schwarzenegger are getting together to make the Governator comic series.
I was on fighting crime while I was governor, maybe secretly.
That's a good Stan Lee.
Then you just...
Excelsior! Greetings, true believers!
Well, if it's as good as Stripperella, then we're all in for something special.
Peter Parker's always been my favorite.
Boy, you were just a Fred Travellina this whole time. I have no idea what comic impersonation skills... We've worked together for over a year, and I've never seen this come out.
Now do Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Excelsior!
Not as good as your Stanley. You were the writer of the remake of Dawn of the Dead.
Yes.
Which is in my top
Such
five.
Such a fucking great movie.
In my top five zombie movies of all time.
Thank you. Out of 10. Out of the 10 you've seen.
I don't know. No. I've seen way too many.
Jonah's an insane zombie obsessed.
Way too many. Way too many.
What are the other ones in your top five?
Well, number one is...
Let's compare.
Wait, what?
We'll compare. We'll see.
Oh, well, I'll start from number one to go to five.
Okay.
Number one, original Dawn of the Dead.
Okay.
Number two, remake Night of the Living Dead, directed by Tom Savini, who did the effects for all the original ones. Wow. Not that bad. It's pretty fucking good.
I saw it.
You didn't like it?
No, for me, it's number one is the original Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
The first one. It's you can't. Like, he created it there, man.
I know, but I really...
And that ending is awesome.
The ending is great. It's cool. It's very graphic, very real.
Yeah.
But I really judge my, like, favorite movies over, like, rewatchability.
Yeah.
It's, like, stuff I can just toss on at any time.
Do you count 28 Days Later as a zombie
movie? I don't. It's an outbreak movie. 28 Days Later is not a zombie movie. It's an outbreak movie.
But see, you can't really... See, I say it's a zombie movie, but it doesn't matter. There's no such, like... There's no, like, reality of it being a
Don't you
movie
fucking say that. Romero started an idea, and I think I'm gonna follow along Romero, and then Max Brooks perfected that idea.
Okay.
Romero, New Brooksian zombie fanatic is what I like to call myself.
All so right, what's your fine. Third movie?
Okay, third movie is Remake Dawn.
Okay.
Fourth is Shaun, and fifth is Return of the Living Dead.
Your return, yeah. That's
yeah,
that's,
which
that's,
I didn't.
That's very close to my top five. That's
yeah, what is your, do you have?
I would say, well, I would include 28 Days Later as a zombie movie, even though the filmmaker himself says it's not a zombie movie.
Yeah, so
it's
if
like
you're going to...
They're guys that are basically dead that are eating people. So it's like...
You sounds know, like zombie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, there's you know, there's no... In the remake of Dawn of the Dead, it's not necessarily not a virus. We don't give that reason in that movie.
Come
this
on,
is
John.
Awesome!
Sorry, keep going.
Yeah. But the fact that it's you know, you still have the same title as the 1978 classic. But it's you know, it came from monkeys. It was just it's a rage virus. It's like, you know, they
I've never told anybody this till now. But in my remake of Dawn of the Dead, it also comes from monkeys.
Really?
Boom!
Oh, here, wait!
Headshot, motherfucker!
Check it out!
Point gun!
I just made that up just to win. But it's mine. I can do that.
You want to get off my top five? My top five. Which brings me to my point, Zombaby. The Zombaby is a part that I just like I was molested by that moment, and I block it out because it makes me laugh. And I think it's like really funny, but I hated it. I got all nerdy about it. I was like, that doesn't make sense. The Zombaby, it's a digital thing that just goes wah, and then they kill it.
If I had a couple of hours to explain some basic, you know, chemistry and biology to you, I could explain exactly why
I get
the
it.
Zombaby is real.
I get it. I'm dumb.
It's so realistic. because other than that, the movie is scientifically accurate.
It is. It can happen.
I am confused about how zombies aren't outbreaks in general, just because once you're bitten, you then become a zombie.
Yes.
Like it's transferred.
They don't
like
come out. That's the thing.
It's
that's
transferred
the
like a virus, though, right?
Yes, it's transferred like a virus. That's the problem. That's
sounds
the
like an outbreak.
Yeah. It is an outbreak.
I'm very confused.
It is an outbreak.
As to what separates
but it's not
them.
A rage virus,
oh,
which
okay.
is what is in 28
Listen,
Days
guys,
Later.
He convinced me.
This is something. This is a conversation I've been wanting to have for
Jonah,
years.
Jonah, it's... I remember because I knew Steve Niles who did 30 Days a Night,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Steve said that there was a whole other mythology around the Zombaby, like being this, like growing up to become this king, this sentient king of the zombies.
Oh,
like
Tony thing is gonna have a cognitive thought. That doesn't make sense.
No.
That doesn't make sense, right?
Like Viger in Star Trek: The Motion Picture became the Borg.
No, more like Tony Randall's Gremlin and Gremlins 2.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, this guy. There's like so many ovaries are drying up. So many ovaries are drying up.
Well, no. That's my favorite Gremlins movie, though.
Yeah,
that
was
so good.
Gremlins
2 is the
best.
Awesome.
Yeah. No, that's Joe Dante going, oh, you want a sequel of the Gremlins? All right, hold on.
Fuck
and
you.
Then he gets some Gremlins 2, and you're like, that's a good joke. We still have to put it out. No. And then the film's going to break, and then it's going to be the Gremlins, and then Hulk Hogan's going to get up. And then they did a version of for the VHS. It's fucking great. If you guys haven't watched Gremlins 2 in a long time,
it's meta
filmmaking. Yeah. At its
so
best.
Are the Gremlins when they eat after midnight? Are those zombie versions of the fluffy Gremlins? Is that?
Oh shit.
What if that's what if they eat rage?
Top five favorite zombie movies?
No. This stands pretty solid. And you're on it, so fucking take it. Take it.
James Point and James Gunn.
What?
Whoa!
What? He's a guest.
It hasn't been decided.
My
best friend James Gunn and I will talk about this for years.
I know. You guys trade numbers, you'll just get a text in a week like, Zombaby indeed.
Yeah. I've gotten, you know, hundreds of emails explaining to me, you know, things that are like, you know, unrealistic in Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
Which is always to me, it's like, what? It's like,
I've had this argument a million times. I did the voice of a cow on Nickelodeon, and he's a male cow with udders, and people are like, there's no such thing as a male cow with udders. I'm like, animals don't fucking talk. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Where do you want to suspend your disbelief?
Wait a second. So wait, says guy who got mad about capacitive touchscreens like 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, that... You know what? That is irritating. Because there really could be a serial killer who hunted hunted murderers.
Okay. No. Fair enough.
Yeah, all right. Dexter's real. Okay. The dark passenger is real.
That is the hardest part about arguing about zombies, though, because everyone has it in their head, the facts. They have the dreams, and they think about it, and, like, you know, they know what they're going to do if it all comes down. And then you're arguing about somebody about fucking fantasy.
Yeah, yeah.
About nothing that exists.
I have gotten, and this is absolutely true, I had death threats because of fast running zombies.
Really?
Yes.
It can't happen, though.
What?
No. He said can. He said
it
can.
It can happen.
Yeah.
He's explained this to me.
Yeah, well, it can.
Numerous times.
It can happen. Yeah. I love how seriously you take it. It's much more serious.
Well, no, it's fun.
It is
fun, but it's like, yeah, but seriously, it's like, I don't give a shit whether you like slow zombies or fast zombies. Better just, you know, I like them both.
No,
I think
it's like, watch, I like vampires and werewolves too. It's
exactly.
You know, they're two different
That's
things.
Why they fight each other. James Gunn likes me more.
Fast zombies can happen as slow zombies. The thing is, like, when you're infected with a zombie virus.
Not rage.
When you're infected with the zombie virus. The thing is, you still have all of your same muscle mass, so you're going to want to get
to what you want. The thing is. I like that phrase. The thing is. Yeah, like it's a.
The fake thing is, you're going to have all the muscle you have in your body right now to, like, get what you want. And you're going to go as fast as your body is able to go, but the thing is, you're dead. So as you start to run, you're going to wear down your muscles, and then they're not going to regenerate. They're not going to grow back. They're not going to get stronger. Yeah. So as your muscles start to die down from all the stuff, this is fucking real. I'm very upset about all the fucking looks I'm getting.
I just see your faces. I envision an angry, sweaty Jonah, like, making a field guide to zombies with all those, like, Darwinian drawings and, like, muscles decomposing.
Max Brooks did it.
Oh man, that was like a brain.
So much fun.
Sorry. I know. I've known other guys that, like, I've talked to that have directed zombie movies, and they stop liking me after a little bit. But I'm done.
I like it. I think it's a fun conversation.
There's nothing wrong with a healthy zombie debate between friends. It's perfectly normal.
You sounded like you were, like, at a table signing autographs, and the guy's talking. You're like, no, it's a fun conversation to have. Not tired of it at all.
Here, I have my movie. Will you watch it? Oh, yeah, I'll watch that. Oh yeah, I'll take that.
Yeah, yeah. See, I took your style and put it one step further.
Yeah. He's changed his car engine to power off of their movies. I'll just burn it.
So we want to. I want to take a couple questions from the audience before. And so the three best questions will each get. A super CD signed by Mr. James Gunn.
It's just a mix he made. It's just a super CD.
And signed by Tyler Bates.
And signed by Tyler Bates, who did the composer. Motion, the score as well. Awesome. So are there any questions?
I see some hands.
I see a hand.
I don't.
All right, you'll have to come forward, and I'll bring the mic to you. Up here, sir, so we can get you for the podcast audience. Hmm. Excuse me, I'm sorry.
You're the guy that looks like he's into horror movies.
What is your name, sir?
Matt.
All right. Matt, what is your question?
I noticed in the credits that a lot of the songs were written by you. In the original draft, did you go into writing the draft with the songs already, or how far into the process did those songs come about?
Okay.
I got this.
Thank you.
Why is that never not funny to me? Why is that always funny?
The truth is, the songs that were written by, I used to play in a band called The Icons, and we needed songs just for filler. Like, there's a prom at the beginning, and we just needed music in the deep background. That's all that is in terms of the music I wrote. There's deep background music, and I knew that I could use my own songs for free. So that's why I did that. Was that the whole question? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Right.
But a lot of the songs in the movie, I wrote the screenplay to, like the animation sequence at the beginning. Like when I first wrote the screenplay back in 2002, that's a band called Czar, and that's a song called "Calling All Destroyers." And I actually wrote the whole animated sequence to that song back then. And I get very stuck on songs. So most of the music in the movie we picked out ahead of time. And we also, you know, like even on set, we would play the songs while we were shooting those montage sequences to kind of have things move in the right direction. And the one other weird thing is we actually did part of the score before we ever shot. All the stuff you hear at the end of the movie, we actually played that music on set that Tyler Bates and I worked on before we ever shot the film to kind of give it the same feel.
Very cool.
Yeah. Japanese horror movie Houseu also had a soundtrack before the movie was ever made.
Shut up, nerd.
And Ennio Morricone and Sergio Leone. That's
yes,
they,
exactly,
that's
yeah.
Yes, sir, in the shark sweatshirts. Right. Shirts? I don't know how plural works.
Hey, that's an Alex Party shirt, man.
Oh, that's nice. Alex's yeah. shirt. I know Alex.
I have that same sweats, but it's gray. Mine
Alex
gray.
Alex Party gave me, he had done a post, we nerded out about the Bat Boy, the Bat Child, who was in Weekly World News for years and years.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, I have this panel that I painted a long time ago. It's just the Bat Child. And I have an
it's
Alex
in
Party.
His office.
Yeah, wow. of Alex's painted the Bat Child. Anyway, this is about you.
He's just standing sorry. There.
He doesn't care.
This
yeah.
other time,
yeah, cool.
I was
you
eating
have that
this
really
sandwich,
cool.
and it was really
yeah.
good.
No, that's,
and the
that's
turkey
awesome.
Was
that's
moist.
Awesome. Oh yeah, yeah.
What do you want? Oh, questions. What's your name?
Sam.
Hi, Sam.
Hello. I'm a really huge fan of the band Monster.
Yeah. Really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Okay. Great.
One of my favorite bands. And I noticed in the end credits of the movie, there is a version of a Monster song that seems like it was recorded specifically for the movie.
That's exactly right.
And that's from a band that broke up years ago. So was that made specifically for this? Did they get back together, or was it just Anders?
It's just Anders. So Anders Vinden is the lead singer of Monster. He plays under the name Money Brother today in Sweden. I'm a huge fan of Swedish music. We have lots of Swedish music in the movie. We have
ABBA,
Monster.
ABBA.
We have 12 ABBA songs. Then we have Monster. We have Money Brother. We have The Ark. We have the Nomads, all these Swedish bands, and I met Anders on MySpace and asked him if we could use a song because I wrote the
I'm
the
sorry,
montage.
What?
This is back. Well,
it's a while ago.
What's that?
And but so we used his song, God Knows My Name, the Monster song for the montage. But there's also a Money Brothers song in there that he gave us off his newest album, and he recorded a special version of God Knows My Name for the end of the movie. Yeah.
I think that deserves a CD right there. Oh! That was a...
Is the song on the CD? Because that's fucking meta.
I gotta be honest. You know, I've been to a lot of panels, and when someone gets up and they have a question that's about a very specific piece of information, it's not always
You're
awesome.
You're giving away your secrets.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Then
I'm
people
sorry.
Will know how to win
now
the other
Sam's
two.
Gonna go to every
that was
panel
an excellent
you do.
Question. There's yes, sir, there's a question back here. Come forward and be heard. What is your name?
He's from Hawaii.
I am. You are?
I'm from Hawaii. Yes.
Really didn't associate
how did you,
that.
How did you know
I just
that?
Thought, hi.
How did, I've met him before. We were friends. He's from Hawaii. His dad was actually in a punk band that I was really into called the Squids. Yes. It was like a legendary Hawaii punk band. And his dad.
One of those legendary Hawaii punk bands.
Fuck you.
They only use 12 letters. Only use 12 letters to rebel. They're...
like that guy that does Somewhere Over the Rainbow, you know, and then all your punk
that's,
bands.
That's
Hawaii
that's
music.
Israel Kamakavika Ole. Right? Brada is.
Is, yeah. Yeah, I know about is.
Yeah, I got beat up in high school, or in middle school because...
you could have just stopped right there.
The day the day after Brada is, everyone, it's the guy Israel Kamakavika Ole, he died, and everyone called him Brada is, and the day after he died, someone was like, oh, did you hear about Brada is? I was like, do you mean Brada was?
It's too bad they
he
didn't appreciate a good joke.
Meta.
Yeah,
a good joke.
That's not
and then
meta.
I feel
I
some fat fucking fingers poking on my shoulder. No, worse.
Oh,
because they were Samoan and violent.
Did what,
well,
what
I only know Samoans from wrestling.
I only know Samoans from what Jonah has described on this show.
You're not painting a nice picture of these
no,
people.
No, I know. I'm very racist when it comes to that.
Because they got beaten up racist. A lot. All right, what is your question?
First of all, I just want to commend you on the awesome image of a Burning Man getting stabbed. That yeah. was my favorite part of the movie. I almost fell out of my chair when I saw that.
That's pretty fucking funny.
That you have, our producer is Ted Hope, who has worked on a lot of movies, you know, Happiness, American Splendor, and he's a producer of Super. And at one point, I almost dropped that scene from the movie, and he convinced me to keep it. So
I'm glad you
did. Ted also, thanks for that.
I do have a question, though. It's kind of a nerdy filmmaking question, but
sure.
I'm wondering if the choice for the handheld camera work was kind of due to the budget, or was that, do you want to go for that gritty, kind of like 70s look?
The second one.
Yeah, no. It was always, I always wanted to show a superhero from a completely different seedy angle. And there was always, you know, I always wanted to do it handheld. I always wanted to do it very gritty and down to earth with sort of a cinema verite style. And I just wanted to show the superhero from a completely different angle than we've seen him before.
Excellent. Thank
what was
you.
The shot on? What was the shot on?
The red.
The red.
The red one, which is kind
Jonah
of.
Jonah loves
the
red.
It's a very heavy camera, actually. And our guy, Steve Gaynor, our cinematographer, who had to carry it. Because in a normal movie, you do between like 12 and 20 setups a day. We did between 45 and 54 camera setups every single day.
Jesus. And how long was the shoot?
24 days. God, 24 days.
Yeah. And it would have been faster if you got some running zombies.
Yeah, so Steve Gaynor was a hardworking guy. I think I crippled him.
Yeah.
Are there any other questions? Yes, sir. Come up to the mic.
Could have easily held the microphone to his face.
Nope.
You're making him walk
Actually,
around.
It doesn't stretch. It won't. Oh, yeah, it totally would have. Oh, well, sorry.
Sit back down.
Sorry. I have a weird disorder. I can't judge cord lengths.
You're a girl.
What?
What? They have spatial reasoning. They don't understand sorry. My girlfriend broke my car.
As you know,
you don't want the crowd to turn on you.
It's science.
All right. What is your question?
I kind of noticed, like, during the movie, it's like there's just this amazing balance between, like, really, like, nice little, like, sweet, kind of poignant little scenes and then, like, fucking brutality.
Yeah.
Like, I just, you kind of touched
on life,
it earlier.
Man. It's life. It's fucking life.
Take the good with the bad, bro.
But like
the guy that spiked the mic unwarranted. You take the good, you take the bad.
There truth. You have the facts of life.
Hashtag truth.
Yep. Hashtag the facts of life.
Are you guys going to shut the fuck up and let this guy finish his question? Put that mic down. I don't want to see your mouth near that microphone for 5 minutes.
You kind of touched on it before, but it's just like, how did you manage to strike that balance? Was that like a conscious thing that you were going for?
Yeah, I mean, I get a kick out of like touching as many parts of myself as I can at the time. And so it's you know, I'm also very influenced by Asian cinema and going back to like, you know, Johnny Toe's Johnny Toe's Heroic Trio, which is a movie I don't know if anybody's ever seen, about three superhero women. And it'll change in one scene. It'll have the girls slaughtering infants. And the next scene, it's like a slapstick comedy. And the next scene, it's like a Douglas Sirkian melodrama, all within one movie. And I don't go that far, but it's like I like the idea of different tones and different genres, you know, intersecting in a way that we're not used to seeing. And the thing I specifically like is to feel something that's funny and sad at the same time and to be sort of uncomfortable with that. So like, you know, like Rain's Prayer at the beginning is a perfect example
that
of that.
It did. And also, I felt this constant sort of like sympathy battle watching, you know, like Rain. Like all your main characters are not all good.
Yeah, there's
like they're you feel bad for them, and then all of a sudden they're super
they're
fucked
psychos.
Up.
Psychos, yeah. But that was, you know, in a lot of ways there are a couple of movies that reminded me that one is Breaking the Waves. If you've ever seen
this movie, in which
the girl is on a mission from God, and she's her mission from God is to get raped by a bunch of guys. Basically, it's really hardcore. And then the other one is Unforgiven. Actually, if you ever see Unforgiven, Edward Money at the end of the movie. He just starts blowing people away. And because it's Clint Eastwood, like, we're really rooting for him. But another part of us is going, wow, I'm not really sure those guys deserve to get mowed down in the way they're being mowed down. And he shoots little Bill in the face, who's basically kind of trying to protect his town. He's kind of brutal about it. But it's not like it's a black and white thing. And even the reason why Edward Money is hired, he kills that kid that's, you know, didn't really do anything. So It's about playing with those shades of gray and that morality in a way where we don't really know exactly what is right or wrong. And also, like, you know, like you talk about the line butting scene. When the guy butts in line, we hate this guy. We want to see him get his ass kicked. And then we see, you know, Rainn Wilson hit him in the face with the wrench. And we're like, whoa, I wanted to see him get his ass kicked. And I don't know if I do like it. I do kind of like it. But I feel kind of wrong about it. And then he hits his girlfriend, who also butts in line, and you're like,
"You did it too, Craig."
I don't know. Yeah, that's like, and so it's really playing around with our own emotions as an audience and our love of violence. And I have that. I have a mixed relationship to violence, you know. So it's that's yes, it's on purpose.
I got to ask, though, what was the conversation he was having with his girlfriend? He was talking about a hat?
Yeah,
that's the best. That was not in the script. That's Valentine Mealy, who's actually one of the stars of my first movie, Romeo and Juliet. And he's talking about a, God, what kind of hat? He's sailor's hat. Yeah, he said, it's some sort of sailor's cap. I don't know what it is. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It doesn't make any sense.
But the way he says, fuck you, I've never heard anyone say it quite like that before. And so,
go fuck yourself. That's the whole thing.
Go fuck.
Go fuck yourself. Yeah. It's the hand motions that do it, which look really great on this podcast, by the way.
They do. All right, it's been 5 minutes now. There you
go.
Yay! Any other questions? Okay, what back there?
Batman.
Hi, I'm Simone, and I want to punch Jonah in the throat.
Par for the course.
What is your name?
My name is Philip. I'm not from Hawaii, but I'm from San Pedro.
Hey, Pedro, right. Man!
I just want to say, I saw the specials years ago, and I thought it was a really fucking awesome movie. It was my mother-in-law bought me a copy of The Toy Collector.
Oh, wow.
And I'd never heard of you before. I read this book. I'm like, man, this guy's fucked up. Then I was like, I wonder what else he did. Like, oh, shit, he made movies. That's great.
Yeah.
So I was just, do you have any other superhero movies that you've written that you're planning on making?
Not at the present moment, but I love superheroes. And I've actually been working on a comic book. I've been trying to figure out this comic book. I had a deal with Marvel a couple years back to do this limited series.
Which now you have a deal with series. Disney.
Yeah, that's true. It's Donald. It's the Beagle Boys movie. No. So I might still do there's a comic book idea I have about superheroes I might still do, but we'll see about it. I don't know about another movie in the near future. We'll see.
Also, you seem to really like torturing your brother.
I do. My brother Sean, yeah. I kill him many, many times in many movies, and in every movie he has an awful haircut. And,
he was the guy with the mohawk.
Yeah, he has a total Guido mohawk in this movie. That was actually his idea. That's ugly. But in the specials, he played a character by the name of Alien Orphan, who was painted green every day, and he was completely bald. And in Romeo and Juliet, he has bald except for three little blonde pigtails on his head, which was something I drew for him for the barber to show him how to cut his hair. And then he did Humanzi, my web series, in which he was tortured in makeup. Mm-hmm. I hate his guts.
The other thing I want to say is in so many movies, you see somebody with a gun and you see the guy that they're fighting against. You're like, why doesn't he just shoot that guy? And in your movie, every single time that happens, the guy just gets shot. It's never like, oh, he could have just shot him right then. He just shoots him right then. It's fantastic. I love it.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Excellent.
That's the best part. All the choices made are the choices that would be made.
Yeah, that's what I tried to make it real. Tried to make it real.
Any more questions before we wrap it up? All right. Well, I have two CDs left, but what was it?
Pedro.
I would say he enjoyed it.
All right, Pedro gets one. Here you go, San Pedro. Now
that's where the Minutemen are from, man.
Anyone else? No. Okay, so we have one CD left to give away. Who will win the
wet T-shirt contest, prize? All
right.
fellas.
I feel like I want to give it to the guy who was in whose dad was in the punk band that you loved so much.
Sweet, Pedro in Hawaii, the Squids. Although his dad's favorite band now, Muse. Yeah, Muse.
What?
So I just find that odd.
That's his dad's favorite band?
How old's your dad?
He's
63. Wow. His dad's favorite band is Muse. Wow. For his birthday, he brought his dad out to L.A. to go watch Muse. I'm not saying they're a bad band. It's just kind of weird.
Was your dad like the drummer? Because the drummer doesn't care. Like, he doesn't know. Drummers just end up in whatever band they end up
That's
in.
That's true.
They
yeah, yeah.
Actually, I'm a drummer. My dad's a guitar player.
All right. Okay.
That was a great insertion there.
Thank you very much. This was super, super, super fun.
Get it?
I didn't mean it that way. I did not mean it that way.
Explain
it to me,
please.
This was incredibly fun. Is that better, Jonah?
I like it.
Thank you so much for coming here, and thank you guys for coming out. And again, thoroughly enjoyed the movie. It's still playing. It's in limited release, but it'll be on, when did you say, April 16th?
Yeah, it's 13th. So on April 13th, it'll be on demand. Right now, we're in Los Angeles, New York, Boston, D.C., in San Francisco. Next week, we open in Chicago and a few other places. April 15th, we open in St. Louis and Cleveland and a bunch of other cities. So we're opening up in a lot of theaters across the country and a lot of.
Is it fair to say you're
markets.
Opening in select cities?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, again,
but we're opening about it. It's like it's all major markets. So it's except for a couple, you know, one. That,
I think it's really cool that.
Sorry, Houston.
Yeah, that, you're exactly right. Actually, that's the one place that we're not opening, and I get tons of angry emails from Houstonians every day.
Yeah, fuck them.
Yeah. Jonah's a sarcastic psychic. He makes psychic predictions when he's being sarcastic. Again, I think it's really awesome that you had this thing that was stuck in your head and you just kind of went out and made it, which is sort of a theme that we go back to on this podcast over and over again. It's like, hey, if you want to do something, you just fucking go out and do it. And that's kind of what you did.
Yeah, I think that's. I think people always come up and they're asking me, what do you think you should do as a filmmaker? How do you become successful? And it's always just basically start, you know, finish what you start.
Yeah.
You know, if you start something, just finish it. Don't worry so much about it coming out and sucking. Just do it, you know, end it.
Excellent. All right, well, thank you guys so much for coming. Let's have a huge hand for Mr. James
Gunn.
Thank
you.
Who is exhausted and came here anyway. Thanks for coming out. We have a ton of other shows, so check meltcomics.com for the Nerdist at Meltdown calendar. Oh, this was our first official show here at Meltdown.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, Jimmy Dore did his show last night, but this is our first show here at Meltdown. So thank you for showing up tonight, and we'll see you maybe tomorrow night for Black Dynamite. Okay, thanks. Good night, everybody.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.